1941. I was born in Chicago in 1941. Well, my father told me, son, you had better get a gun.
Right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m., and it is a Tuesday, so that means 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's also for talk and text. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to talk about foods that do weird things to your body. We're also going to talk about the craziest things that fans have done to save favorite TV shows and essential freakout movies in honor of Midsummer. Freaking people out. So there you go. Right now, we want to welcome to the show the author of several books, including Lost Restaurants of Chicago. His name is Greg Borzo, and the book is available everywhere at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And it's a terrific, terrific book that celebrates some of the restaurants that aren't around anymore in the city. And it's got some wonderful pictures and some great memories. And it's a terrific book that you can add to the list of terrific stuff that Greg has written. His website is Greg Borzo, B-O-R-Z-O, gregborzo.com. And let's welcome him to the show. Greg, how you doing?
Great. Hi, Nick. I'm doing great tonight.
Good, 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 good. First of all, tell everybody about yourself. You are from Chicago, and you live in the South Loop, correct?
That's right. Yeah, born in Chicago and love the city. Live in the South Loop, so close to the lake, close to the music festivals, the library, everything.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. And I know that you're a bike enthusiast as well.
Yes. I like to bike everywhere. Occasionally I take the L, and that's how I try to get around. I haven't tried one of those scooters yet, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, so there's a scooter that is currently sitting in front of my apartment building, and it's been there.
Oh.
Somebody just left it there, because that's what you do with them. You just leave them there.
Right.
But it's been there for almost a week. It's just sitting
are
in front.
Are you tempted?
No, I'm not. Not at all. But yeah, I find that whole thing to be kind of fascinating. I guess people are enjoying it. It seems to be going over pretty well.
I think so.
Yeah. All right. What is it about this city that you love so much, Greg? I mean, there's so much. You've written a bunch of books about it and articles and things like that. What is it about Chicago that makes it so special? Because I'm a lifelong Chicagoan, too, and I love this place.
Well, the ethnic groups, all the different, of course, ethnic restaurants and ethnic communities, all the ethnic festivals and parades. I really love that. I'm part Dutch and part French, so I'm always looking for some festival to attend. So I like that part of Chicago. I like the museums. They're so, so rich and plentiful. I also like the fact that you can live here without a car and you can get around so easily with public transportation.
Yeah, I haven't driven in over 20 years, and
you're kidding.
No, I used to drive all the time, and I haven't driven. Last time I drove with it was 2000, I think, or 1999, so almost 20
years.
Wow. And I get around fine. There's public transportation. There's, you know, now you can take an Uber if you need to, but you can get around in this city. I like that feature too.
Right. You can't do that in Des Moines, Iowa or something. You know, this is a very, very special treat of Chicago. And, of course, the lake. And now we have a second waterfront on the river.
Yeah. It's beautiful, actually. And actually, the studio that I'm sitting right now overlooks the river. We're right.
Wonderful.
Right next to the river, which is really pretty cool. So let's talk a little bit about some of the books that you've written in the past here before we jump into Lost Restaurants of Chicago, which, by the way, is terrific.
Thanks.
Let's talk about, you know, we just talked about public transportation. We talked about how you ride your bike and take the L. You've written an entire book about the Chicago L. Let's talk about that.
That's right. I used to take the L to work every day. And I was curious about how it worked and why it went down one street and not another, et cetera. So I started to look for a book about the history of the L, and I found a very good one, but it only went up to 1932.
Oh, wow.
So I decided, being a writer, journalist by training, I decided to take a swing at that topic myself. And I figured other people might also be curious about that topic, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, you know, and we were just having a discussion a few weeks ago about whether it's L with the letter L, capital L, or whether it's L-E-L.
Yes, it has appeared both ways, but the way the CTA goes is just a letter L in quotes.
I've always thought, and I understand that that's the way the CTA goes, and that's the markings everywhere. It's just the capital letter L. I know that, but I've always just assumed it was EL because it's elevated.
Right. So. L is short for elevated, but it's more phonetic than the actual spelling.
Right. Right. Well, tell me about what you learned when you were doing the history of the L and finding out what happened. What were some of your favorite stories concerning that book?
Oh boy, how it was built by a bunch of crooks,
yeah.
A bunch of entrepreneurs who were really out to make some money, and they built a lot of investors and bribed a lot of politicians. So it was quite a colorful background. And I was surprised to learn also that there was that the L had to support itself initially, and no government money till the 70s.
Oh, is that right? All the way up until the 70s?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Paid its own way. And the L almost was shut down after World War II because of the deprivations of the Depression and the shortages of World War II. So the L was in terrible shape, and the CTA came along, was created to save the L system, and a good thing it did, because it could have been just dismantled.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating stuff. I actually grew up in an apartment right next to the Ravenswood Brown Line stop. The Brown
wow.
Line, the Addison Brown Line stop. So it's right there, and the house that I grew up in is still right there. So I had outside of my bedroom window, I could see people waiting for the L.
And it was
the Brown Line.
The
Addison. Yeah, I can
that
hear
brings,
it. Go. Yeah,
brings to mind a scene from the Blues Brothers where they live in a flop house right next to the L, and
right.
they never get any peace and quiet.
Right, exactly. it's interesting though because I grew up there, so I got used to it. But luckily. We lived next door to an actual stop, so unless it was an express train, it wasn't that bad. Because if you live right next to the L and it's not a stop, and the L's just come zooming by, that's a lot more annoying than actually just the L pulling up and stopping and then leaving.
Right.
Yeah.
So. When I was a student, I lived right by the L and got 30% off in the rent compared to apartments in the area.
Is that
today,
right?
You pay way more to live near the L. Now, transit-oriented development is so strong that you pay a premium to live near the L.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I currently live right across the street from an L stop. Yeah, 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 the Blue Line. I live right across the street from a Blue Line stop. And
how wonderful.
Yeah. So, and you also wrote a book about cable cars, Chicago cable cars. Now, when you say cable car, immediately you think San Francisco. But they had,
right.
But there was a huge system of cable cars here in Chicago, right?
Yes, and very few people know that. In fact, it was the largest cable car system the world has ever seen.
Wow.
And it ran for 25 years, carried over a billion people, and yet San Francisco gets all the credit, mostly because they were smart enough to save a few lines that still operate to this day, of course, and we tore all of ours out in 1906.
Yeah. Yeah,
we're the ones that really made cable cars successful around the country. Once Chicago built a system, 27 other cities followed Chicago's example.
And where were the cable cars? Where did they run? They ran all over the city.
Yes, on the major streets: State Street, Blue Island, Lincoln, Clark, Milwaukee, LaSalle. You name it.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then you also wrote a book about the fountains of Chicago, like beautiful, fabulous
yes.
fountains, Chicago's fabulous fountains. Tell me about that one.
Oh, that's got to be my favorite book, really, because it's a hardcover book with color photos, original photographs done by Julia Thiel. And it's just amazing to discover how many fountains we had. Initially, I was going to do a book about the fountains of the United States. So I was traveling around the country, going to different cities, and I keep coming back to Chicago and saying, well, you know, what do we have here? And so little by little, I discovered over 130 outdoor public fountains in the city of Chicago. And I decided to do the book just focused on Chicago.
And the pictures, as you mentioned, how did you get Julia involved?
Well, she met me at Lit Fest, Printers Row Lit Fest, years ago, and was interested in my books, and created a website for me. One thing led to another, and she's a professional photographer, so she volunteered to do all the pictures.
Wow, that's
a pretty good deal. She did a beautiful job.
Yeah, and so all those books are available, those three, and but the one we want to talk about here is Lost Restaurants of Chicago. We're going to break here in a couple of minutes, but how did you get our good friend Doug Sohn, who, of course, legendarily ran Hot Doug's, to do your foreword here?
That's a great question, because when I was doing my research, I reached out to a lot of entrepreneurs and restaurateurs, and some of them never replied. Doug did, and simply replied to an email. And he didn't just reply. He was enthusiastic and helpful right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It was really wonderful. When I remember the first time I spoke to him after emailing him, he called me, and I said, "Well, you had a couple of minutes?" We were on the phone for an hour.
Yeah.
Because he was so excited and so helpful. So it's really to his credit that he stepped up and was interested in participating and telling not only his story, but the whole idea of launching a restaurant, what makes a restaurant work, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a good guy. I've had him on the show several times, and of course, obviously.
Oh, really?
Of course, I went to Hot Doug's a lot, and we missed the place. You can still get his encased sausages, though, at like Wrigley and other places where he does pop-ups. But the old Hot Doug's with the line outside and all that, and Doug taking every single order there every day. I loved that place. It was just a special, special place, and I was sad to see it go.
Oh, yes, for sure.
So, all right, Greg, hang on, okay?
Okie doke.
Okay, Greg Borzo is with us. He is the author of Lost Restaurants of Chicago, which is a really great book. Lots of wonderful pictures and memories in it. And when we come back, we'll dive right into it. Some of the restaurants that we all miss. Lost Restaurants of Chicago is the book. Greg Borzo is the author, and that's gregborzo.com, BORZO.com. You can also get it, you know, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all that other stuff. So when we come back, we will dive right into the Lost Restaurants of Chicago right after this on 720 WGN.
Chicago, Chicago, that toddling town. Chicago, Chicago, I will show you around. I love it. Bet your bottom dollar you lose.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. as we are every weekday morning. And it is Tuesday, so that's two for Tuesday. Get them in. We'll play them in a little bit. And that's one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We are going to talk about foods that do weird things to your body. We're also going to talk about craziest things that fans have done to save their favorite TV shows. And in honor of a great freakout movie that just opened this past weekend, Midsummer, we're going to talk about some classic and essential freakout movies. All that and more, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Let's get back into the conversation. My guest is Greg Borzo. He's the author of a book called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. And that's exactly what it is. That's what it's about. So let's get back to this. Greg, where did the idea come from for this one?
Well, sitting around in restaurants with friends talking about good memories and funny stories. And I just figured, well, that's going to be successful, a fun book to write, and it would catch a lot of interest. I figured just from the interest of my friends.
Okay. And how long did it take you to put this thing together and research it and all that?
Well, in a way, you know, a lifetime, because I've eaten at so many of these restaurants myself. But, you know, pretty much 3-4 years from start to finish on the book itself. But I did have to draw on my experiences at these restaurants over over, you know, many, many years.
Yeah. Well, it brings back a ton of memories, and I've eaten at several of these lost places too. And the pictures are just beautiful. Like, they bring back a lot of memories, and you have pictures pictures of the menus and of the fronts and everything in the interiors. They're really great. Where did a lot of these pictures come from?
The Chicago History Museum. Many came from private collections. Other photos came from universities. It's a quite an expensive process to purchase the photos and the rights to use them, but well worth it.
Yeah. Well, it looks great. I mean, it gives a wonderful feel to the book. So, what are some of your favorites? Some of your favorite lost restaurants and some stories behind them? Which ones would you choose?
Oh boy, if there was one that I wish I had eaten at, it'd be hard to say. But let's just say Sky High Drive-In. It was a drive-in at Monroe and Cicero, and it featured a regular hot dog kind of hamburger drive-in. But they plopped an airplane on the roof.
Yeah.
And so you'd walk in the restaurant, order your food, then you'd go upstairs into the plane and eat your meal.
Well, that's actually a wonderful picture that's on the back cover of the book.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's a really, really unique
and
looking place.
A real plane that was damaged in landing at O'Hare Airport in the early 60s. They didn't know what to do with it, so they dismantled it and rebuilt it on top of this drive-in restaurant.
That's really crazy.
Yeah.
That's really crazy. Now, I
wish I had eaten at Don the Beachcomber, too. I mean, that must have been a pretty, pretty crazy place, tiki bar.
So I'm looking through this right here, and of course, the legendary Como Inn is featured.
Yes.
You would see it driving in right off of Milwaukee. It was always there.
What a crazy place, though. I mean, it featured many small rooms, and it was sometimes hard to find your way around. I went to the restroom once and had a hard time finding my room and my table because there were hallways and small rooms and a lot of dark corners, and they even had some tables with kind of a curtain that you could draw across and have a little bit of privacy. So it was a very memorable place.
Yeah, it really was. You have some wonderful pictures here. One of my favorite pictures in the book involves the Pump Room, which was a legendary place inside the Ambassador East. And you got a great picture of John Belushi and Roger Ebert sitting at Booth 1, legendary Booth 1 of the Pump Room. What did you learn about the Pump Room?
Well, it was the place to see and be seen. The photo features a telephone on the table, so
right.
It kind of dates things where you were really important if somebody provided a phone for you at your table.
Right.
What a wonderful restaurant. It's a place I never could afford to eat at back in the day. And, of course, the Pump Room closed, but it's been reopened as Booth 1.
Mm.
So to research the book thoroughly, I just had to go and have dinner there, tax deductible business expense, right?
Right.
And I was surprised to see that the famous Booth 1 wasn't tucked away in a corner. It was right front and center. I had figured the movie stars would want a little bit of privacy, but no, they went there to be seen, and their table was front and center. They must have been bothered throughout their evenings there souvenir hunters and autograph hunters.
Years ago, the Chicago Film Critic Association would have their annual awards in the Pump Room.
Oh, wonderful!
Yeah, so I've been there several times, and that was a really wonderful place.
And you can still have that experience by going to Booth 1 today.
There you go, Booth 1. Check it out. All right, how about the legendary Fritzels on State?
Well, that was a real kind of a Mad Men kind of era restaurant. Business lunches were famous there. That's where you'd have your three martini lunch for sure.
Yeah.
At Fritzel's. It attracted attorneys and politicians and bankers, a lot of your heavy hitters. so much so that the cops knew not to write tickets for any cars that were parked nearby because they wouldn't pay the ticket anyway.
Right.
You know, why bother?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the picture that you have here of Fritzl's right on State Street, right by the Chicago Theater, boy, I mean, it's just so interesting to see. And there's, by the way, a cable car in this picture. So that's in there too. Very good.
I try to link things together that way. Yes.
Yeah. How about Gordon on Clark Street?
That's another restaurateur who was very helpful to me. So I know a little bit about Gordon. It was founded by Gordon Sinclair and he worked at the Trib. They let him go and, he was without a job and pretty much broke. And he biked around town looking for, a suitable, affordable place to open a restaurant. He found this place on North Clark Street that was sandwiched between a Currency Exchange and an adult bookstore, and he could afford the rent, so he opened a restaurant there. And through the force of his personality, it was very, very successful. In fact, it even became Chicago's biggest revenue-generating restaurant.
Wow.
For a few years in a row.
Wow.
Mostly through the force of his personality and his style. He would do things like have pajama parties at the restaurant, and you couldn't get in unless you were dressed in pajamas. Things like that, yeah.
Wow, okay. And then, of course, the legendary Shea Paul, which is as everybody knows, featured in the Blues Brothers.
Right.
Talk a little bit about Shea Paul.
Well, Shea Paul was the quintessential French restaurant, classic menus, snooty waiters, stiff kind of formal place, which is why the Blues Brothers picked it to make fun of it in that movie.
Yeah.
But wonderful food, beautiful decor. In an old McCormick mansion, so the setting was beautiful. Really a wonderful place to impress a date.
Yeah. I had never been there. The closest I've ever gotten there was outside and the Blues Brothers. That's the closest that I've ever been to visit. Some of the other ones I just want to quickly mention. You got Maxim's, Charlie Trotter's, which was, you know, widely considered one of the best restaurants in the country, and he was one of the best chefs in the world. Trader Vic's, which was one of my favorite places. I loved that place. I loved everything about Trader Vic's. I thought it was just great.
Especially the drinks, right?
It was great. And of course, the Black Hawk, which was like one of the best fine dining restaurants of its time.
Yes, and the music at the Black Hawk was legendary.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, Nick, I want to mention one thing. A lot of people think the book's only about restaurants that are gone, but in many cases, you know, when I'm talking about something like Trader Vic's, you know, I'll mention other tiki restaurants that are still open today.
Sure.
So you can go and get that experience, you know. For example, the Como Inn is closed, but you can go to the Italian Village.
Right.
Or Soul Queen Cafe is closed, but you can still go to Pearl's.
Right.
And so you can still get that old world experience and that genuine French, Italian, soul food, whatever it is.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, this city is loaded with amazing restaurants, and you can have an incredible variety of great experiences eating in this city. There's no question about it. Now, if you do an update on this book, you have to add one that just closed in my neighborhood last year, Sabatino's.
Oh, yeah.
One of my favorite restaurants ever. Old school Italian restaurant. And, you know, I live not very far from there. And it was a really sad day when that closed down.
You're so right. Yeah. So, Monastero's also closed.
Yes. Yes, it did.
Similar restaurants. So, yes, unfortunately, a lot of these restaurants continue to close. So we got to eat out early and often.
There you go.
In order to keep the these restaurants going so they won't become lost restaurants.
That's great, right. Okay, Greg, real pleasure talking to you. I really enjoy your work. The book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. It's available everywhere books are sold, and you can go to gregborzo.com for more information. Greg, a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was fun to talk with you.
Okay, take care. Bye. Greg Borzo, everybody. The book is called Lost Restaurants of Chicago. And again, you can go to gregborzo.com. That's Borzo, gregborzo.com. All right, we'll take a break here for the news on 720 WGN.